Educate with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Welcome to the 87th episode of Robots. I'm Jana, and today we'll be hearing from three roboticists who've been using robots to wake the curiosity of children and teenagers in a number of exciting educational projects. But first, as always, let's get the latest news in robotics with Christine.
Thank you. A group of students at the ETH Zurich have developed a base jumping robot. To climb up a wall, the robot uses an impeller, basically a rotor spinning in a tube, to create a mini tornado between the robot and the wall. The advantage of this technique is that it does not require a seal between wall and robot, which allows the robot to even drive up rough walls. Once it reaches enough height, the robot can deploy its paraglider by unfolding a mechanical carbon fiber frame. The impeller is then switched off, and the robot safely returns back to the ground. Following completion of the remote-controlled prototype, the students are now working on a more autonomous robot. The U.S. Naval Research Laboratory has developed a novel robotic materials testing system. The robot can automatically stress composite materials in all three translational and all three rotational degrees of freedom and measure the material response using machine vision and strain measurements. In a recent test, the robot performed 216 specimen tests at a rate of 26 per hour, opening the door for drastic efficiency gains for the design, certification, and quality control of composite materials used for sea and aerospace platforms. For more information on the ETH Zurich's base jumping robot, the novel robotics materials testing system, and more, have a look at www.robotspodcast.com.
Francesco Mondara is the head of the Mobile Robotics, for short MoBots, group at EPFL in Switzerland. He initiated a robotic festival, now held annually at EPFL in Lausanne. This year the festival boasted nearly 30 exhibitions and attracted more than 13,000 visitors in a single day. Francesco spoke to our reporter Adrian about his group's activities in educational robotics.
Hello Francesco, and welcome to Robots.
Hello.
Your group has a long tradition in developing robots for use in research and education. Can you give us a brief overview?
Yes, so basically I started participating in this type of project in the 90s, 91, 92, when we started developing the Capra robot. So this was a robot that was initially designed for research, and then used also for education. This has been a long part of my experience in designing robots. So I've been through the fact of designing the robot, then diffusing it to other universities, building up collaborations, building up a company, selling it, managing the company, etc. So this has been a full cycle, I would say, with the Capra. And then after the Capra, I came back to EPFL for research, and we designed together with André Guignard the S-Bot, which was also a robot for research, but research in self-assembling swarm robotics. And this was a big step in technology. So the Capra was a 68,000 processor. It was a technology that we had in 91, 92. A very nice design at the level of the processor to use it in the best way. That was done by Edoardo Franzi, and a nice mechanical design made by André Guignard. Then with the S-Bot, I collaborated with André Guignard again to build up something that was more complicated in terms of mechanics and with a new electronics with Linux running on it, etc. And then the S-Bot was never sold or distributed around, so it was distributed among the partner of the project. The next robot that has been distributed was the EPAC. And in that case, the EPAC was really designed as an educational robot. So it was designed to be cheaper, to be manufactured, because the Kepler at the beginning was not designed to be manufactured outside. And now we are working on the next generation of educational robot, which is the Timio robot. And we already designed two versions, which has been distributed here in the area of Lausanne during events that we organize. And this is the educational robot, which is really designed for kids, not for university education. So I would say that, yeah, we have moved from research-oriented robot to educational-oriented robot. And we try to have the Timio robot basically has the same complexity as the Kepra 15 years ago. But now we can offer this to a kid. And at that time was a very high-end research tool. Mm-hmm.
There are many other ways to encourage young people to go into robotics or engineering. Dean Kamen's first initiative is one way, robot kits or Lego Mindstorms another, and hobbyist clubs yet another. Why did you choose to build a complete robot and sell it, rather than sell a robot kit or organize first-like events or found a robotics club?
So basically, now we are working on the Timio, but Timio is part of a more general plan or set of actions. So Timio is a tool that answers to some requirement that we feel in the term of platforms. So our main job is designing robots. So it was more or less logical that we design a new platform. But this is part of a set of action. Another action is the organization of events using the Timio workshops. So we test our robots with kids, we distribute it, and we try to learn from this. So we do surveys, we follow the kids that are using this. Well, for instance, for the first Timio robot, we went through 2 years of evaluation. And this is also part of a larger type of events that we organize, is the Robotic Festival. So at DPFL, we organize now every year a Robotic Festival where we show to the general public and to young generation robots and the related technologies.
The Robotics Festival started in 2008. Can you tell us a little about this event? How did it start? What was your original goal?
Yes, so we started the Robotic Festival because at the PFL we had a set of events, single events, related to robotics but not connected together. So for instance, we had the Robotic Club, which is managed by the students, and they had their own event. We had a robotic contest ourselves. We had days of visit from classes, etc. So we had a lot of spread activities all around the PFL. And the idea of the first festival was just to put all this together and just have a better platform in terms of visibility. And then the first year, we had a huge success. So already the first year, we had 3,000 visitors. And then we understood that, okay, there is a real need and people really appreciate it. So basically we went through now 4 editions, and now we have reached between 10 and 15,000 visitors during the one day of the event.
What are the main difficulties in organizing this type of event, this large-scale event?
Okay, I think one key issue was to find the right formula for the festival, to keep people interested or to attract people. And the key element of our festival are the workshops. So this year we offered nearly 2,000 places for kids or for people within workshop where people could solder or program or build up or experiment with robots. This was the first issue, was to find the right formula, and now I think that we have a formula which is very appealing. And now that we have an appealing formula, the problem is to manage the amount of people that we are attracting, because we are attracting 10 to 15,000 people in one day. Those people have registered to events, to workshop. We have an organization, a schedule of workshop all the day, etc. And managing all this is quite a nightmare, in the sense that we have between 300 and 400 people of staff during the day, and just organizing all this and having something that goes smoothly from the morning to the evening is a nice challenge. Now we have one full person who is taking care, directing this, so Marisa Frere, and we are now shaping the organization in order to be able to take this challenge for the next years.
Why do you think that it is important that children be exposed to robotics?
So I think that children, but people in general, do not know enough or perhaps underestimate a little bit technology. Everybody now has a cellular phone in his pocket, and but people don't worry about what's the impact of this, or why, or how it works, etc. And I think that it's important in our society that people are a little bit more aware of what they use or what shaped their life. So a little bit like the internet. So if people don't understand where the information they enter will go, then suddenly they are surprised that their profile is somewhere else where they expect it to be, etc. So in the same way, I think that technology is playing a crucial role now, and people should know a little bit more about technology, about research, and about robotics, which probably is one of the next major things that will come in our daily life. So I think that children should be a little bit more aware of what robots are and what technology is about. And one of the main goals of the festival is to make a better link between the people, general public, technology, researcher, or people who are shaping technology now.
Are you preparing something special for next year's edition?
So every year we have something special. It's a little bit early to say it now. But what's in any case a direction we are taking now, and something new that we are making within the festival, is to better include teacher and schools into the festival. We discovered, in fact, that we have a lot of workshops, that several workshops are driven by teachers, so people who are really comfortable with technology, etc. And plenty of other teachers could learn a lot by just looking to those workshops. And this year, for the first time, we invited some teacher which are not used to work with robotics to come and look at the workshop, or even participate to the workshop. And we had a very, very positive feedback. So the festival become not only a possibility to the large public to learn about robotics, but also a possibility for professionals, so teacher or people who are organizing events, etc., to see once in real time and in a real situation how robotics can be used to entertain or to give lessons to kids and to pass a message. So I think that next year will be another year, where, a year where we even more will include teachers into our program so that they can bring back into schools the experience of the festival and the type of tools that we are using in the festival.
Thank you, Francesco, for joining us on Robots.
Thank you to you.
Stéphane Magnenon used to be a member of the Mobots group and is now doing a postdoc at ETH in Zurich. He speaks about the Aceba tool, which is a software tool that allows anyone to program robots easily and efficiently. It was used in workshops at the EPFL Robotic Festival to introduce children to robot programming.
Hello, Stéphane, and welcome to Robots.
Hello, Adrian.
Could you please give a short description of yourself to our audience?
Yes, of course. So I'm currently a postdoc in ETH Zurich in the laboratory of Professor Roland Siegwart, and I made my PhD at EPFL in the Laboratory of Robotic Systems in the group of Francesco Mondada, the Mobots group. And my master, I did also at EPFL, was in computer science, so I'm a computer scientist doing robotics. So about my research, in fact, that I think that if you look at robotics, especially research in robotics, we see that each field is quite advanced. But if we look at robotic applications in the real world, we are far behind. And I think that one of the reasons is that putting things together is difficult. So I think that to address, in research, to address sub-problems, we typically make simplifications that are necessary to attack these sub-problems. But when we have to integrate these into a real working application, it's a lot of technical difficulties. So I'm interested in how we can optimize this integration process, or we can deploy robots in minutes instead of days, and or we can maybe bring a bit of the intelligence and autonomy that we promise in papers into real-world applications. And I think that these aspects go further than just technical challenges. They really raise scientific questions.
Okay. Within your PhD thesis, you worked on a project called Aceba. Could you talk about this? First of all, what does the name Aceba stand for?
So the name Aceba stands for Actuator and Sensors Event-Based Architecture. So Aceba stems from understanding some problem that we saw in a previous European project that was called SwarmBot, in which with Francesco Mondada we developed a robot called the ESBot, and that was a very highly integrated robot. It had 12 peak microcontroller for a diameter of like 10 centimeter. So it was like the most integrated robot given the size at that time. And these microcontrollers, they did communicate through I2C. And we quickly get into troubles because the robot was working on a synchronous read process act loop. And when the main processor, that was a Linux ARM, was reading all the microcontroller, we had overload on the bus and a lot of problem. So in the next project called Swarmanoid, we developed a new robot, the MarkSpot. And for this robot, we wanted to have a more distributed structure. So Aceba stems from the idea is to put a bit of the intelligence into the microcontrollers and to have an event-based communication paradigm.
Which robots are supported by this architecture?
Typically, the Aceba architecture is interesting for two types of robot. One type is a multi-microcontrollers robot, such as MarkSpot and the NBot robot from the Swarmanoid projects. And it's also interesting for educational robots, typically the EPAC and the Timio robot. And because Azeba allows to write program for robots easily and efficiently on microcontroller-based robots, which usually are a bit difficult to program because you have to program them in C with a not-so-friendly IDE, etc.
Could you give some examples of the features that make the Azeba environment good for introducing children to robot programming?
I would highlight three different aspects. The first aspect is the easy-to-learn language of Azeba. So Azeba is based on a language which has the more or less the complexity of BASIC with the syntax of MATLAB, more or less. So it's very convenient to use. The syntax is unambiguous, and it's very very easy to enter this language. The second aspect, I would say, is the integrated development environment, Azeba Studio, that has a nice feature like real-time inspection of robot sensors, actuators, and user-defined variables, as well as on-typing compilation and integrating help. So these features make programming much easier, much more efficient, and also they require the programmer to have less knowledge. He can or she can really have a look of what is here in the robot. And I would say that the third aspect, for especially for education, is the joy of making a program on a robot. Because when you program a robot, you can see the result as a physical object in the world. And I think this embodiment aspect is really important for the pedagogical point of view. It allows the children, I mean everyone, but especially the children, to be able to really feel what they have programmed. And it makes a nice link between something abstract, the program itself, and something more concrete, the behavior.
What is the Azeba challenge?
So Azeba challenge is a multiplayer robot simulator that we have developed for the EPFL Robotic Festivals 3 years ago. And the idea of this simulator is that players can program their robot and the robot evolve in a single arena. And there is a simple competitive game in which the robot has to harvest more food than the others. So this brings a nice dynamics between the players. And we have seen that it works nice to have also people to learn a bit programming when they don't have access to physical robot.
Can you tell us a bit about the feedback you got from children participating in this challenge?
Yeah, so in general, the children were very happy, and some of them were really delighted. In general, we see that most of the children, they never approach programming or robotics before, and through this either the Azeba challenge or the Timio, they really have been able to retouch what robotic or programming is, and I think that for them it's really, really a very interesting experience. We saw that it's really important to have a strong staff, in the sense that the children learn fast, but they also get bored and distracted fast as well. And often, the children lack some knowledge, like they haven't done algebra or some really difficulties to type with the keyboard. So with help, they can go over these limitations, but of course, they need help. That said, when they get the help and they really manage to do it, then they are really happy, and I think that it's really good for them because it helps them to understand elementary algebra and physics in a way that is probably much more efficient than what they learn typically in the normal courses at school when they have to do exercises and so on.
What is the current status of Azeba?
So it's very much alive. We are approaching version 1.0. We still have some work to do, some things to polish to release this version, but we are not that far from it. We're also working hard on developing educational material and a community around it. Typically, we have a wiki on azeba.wiki.com, and we hope that people will begin using this wiki. And the goal on the middle term would be to bootstrap a strong open source community around this.
Could you give a few examples of features that aren't already there but you'd like to see included in Azeba in the future?
So, typically, the Azeba development environment provides an integrated plot tool And it's quite nice because you can see the content of the event plotted over time. And this tool will certainly need improvement. I think that for education, it's really important, to, and also for research, to be very able to very easily access such a tool. On the longer run, I'm convinced that it would be very interesting from the pedagogical point of view, maybe to network this environment, because we have seen that most of the children, they are doing typically all the same mistakes. And if we manage to do some machine learning, to apply some adaptation algorithm, we might be able to detect these mistakes and also to have a nice interface with the teachers, so that the teachers can comment maybe on the mistakes, and this could be fed back to the people learning to program. And I think that currently no programming environment provide this, and probably something that might be very interesting for the future.
Thank you, Stefan, for joining us on Robots.
Thank you, Adrian.
Fanny Redo is a PhD student in the Mobots group. Working with Francesco Mondada, she's researching robots for education. She spoke to Adrian about the low-cost educational Thymeo 2 robot, which is programmed with the Asebo tool and has a high degree of interactivity to demonstrate basic robot functionalities to young audiences.
Hi, Fanny, and welcome to Robots.
Hello, Adrian.
Could you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
So, my name is Fanny Hedu. I'm currently a PhD student at the Robotic Systems Laboratory in EPFL. I'm working in the frame of the NCCRA on robots for education, and currently I'm spending most of my time on the Thymeo project.
What is Thymeo?
So Thymeo is a small desktop mobile robot that we designed for use with children, so for education and entertainment. It's a complete robot with a wide set of sensors and actuators and has some basic behaviors, can also be programmed by the children themselves.
What are the key functionalities of the robot?
So I would say the key functionalities is that it has many sensors all integrated in the same complete robot that can be directly used by the children. And for example, it has 9 infrared sensors, an accelerometer, a microphone and speaker, 2 motors, also temperature sensors and an SD card reader. It has some basic behaviors that use these sensors and can also be reprogrammed by the children. And one of the aspects that were very important to us is the sensor visualization. So for every sensor, we put an LED next to it, and this helps showing the activity on the sensor. So when the children start using the robot, they can have a more immediate comprehension of its functioning because they can have a look either on the programming interface and see the values in real time of the sensors, and also on the robot itself, the LED will show the activity by a light intensity. Then the key point of this robot, that it's very cheap. We really wanted to have the lowest cost possible so it can be accessible to families and also to classes that want to buy robots for all the children in the class. This can represent quite a big amount of money for some schools, and they cannot afford other kits such as the Lego Mindstorms or similar ones. And finally, the fact that it's a complete robot ready to be used allows us to make some workshops with very young children, not only teenagers, because of the soldering or more complex tasks to achieve, but with this complete robot, even 7-year-old children can already use it, and we have done this successfully in the robotic festival.
This is actually the second version of Thymeo, Thymeo 2. How does it differ from the original Thymeo?
So Thymeo 1 was the first try at making a robot for children. It was mainly based on the construction, so it was really oriented towards very young children. It was also a small desktop mobile robot, had very few sensors, but could be separated into different parts. Then the children would come and build their own robot around cardboard construction or such. And this modularity allowed the children to really customize their robot. But for us, it was quite limited, and we noticed that even though all the children liked it in the workshops, because this robot was first introduced as the tool for the workshop in the robotic festival. So even though they would really like the workshop and be really glad to have this robot, they would not use it once they got home because they would just, you know, use it as decoration, and they've seen everything you can do with it after the one-hour workshop, and we really wanted to extend the life of the robot. And we conducted a study with the parents of the children who got the first Timmy robot, asking them what new features they would add to the robot or what were the defects in the first one. And the things that came out is that we really like the robot to be programmable so that the children can actually modify the behavior and also have some new functionalities like using Lego plugs for constructions instead of just cardboard construction or such. So basically, I would say that Timio 2 is intended maybe for a little bit older children, but has many more possibilities. We really hope that once they have it, they can use it for a long time and always discover new things by trying out some programming or discovering the new sensors, using them a bit more thoroughly.
Is it easy to program?
Actually, it's very easy to program because we have linked it with the Aziba interface, which you can download freely from the website after you buy the robot. And this is a very intuitive interface that shows at once and in real time the value of all the sensors and internal variables. And it has a very simple script language, quite similar to MATLAB language, actually. And you can directly modify the behavior or create new, you know, link the sensors to the motors and create your new behavior without taking care of all the initialization part or too much technical stuff.
What were the main challenges when developing the robot?
I would say the main challenge was to limit ourselves when choosing the functionalities we wanted to add to the robot, because we had many ideas and we really wanted to put everything in the robot. But at the same time, we had to keep this very low price, because I think it's the key to having it accessible to all the families and children. And also we were limited by the time, which actually helped us to finally do this selection in the features, because we had to start making the robot if we wanted it to be ready for the next festival.
Who are the current and potential future users?
So for the moment, the robot has been used, as I told, in the robotic festival, and the children who came and took part in the festival could take it back at home. But thanks to this kind of event, we could make a lot of contact with the teachers and classes, and we have a lot of interest from them. And in the future, we will try to develop more educational material that can be used actually in schools and collaborate more with them to make tests in classes and integrate it with the standard school program.
How much is the Timio? Where can I buy mine?
So it costs 99 francs, and if you're interested in buying one, you should consult the Mopsia website.
Are there plans for a Timio 3?
So, of course, I will continue working on educational robots because it's the subject of my thesis, and certainly we will have new versions of new robots based on the Timio and new prototypes. Maybe based on the feedback of the users or, you know, some specialization of the existing robot for a specific application. But probably we will not make a big series of robots like we did with this one.
Thank you, Fanny, for joining us on Robots.
Thank you for inviting me.
And that's it for today. As always, if you don't want to wait for the next episode, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com for extra information and all our past episodes. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Until then, goodbye. Educate with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.